You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the Relationship Engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to 90 Days Soulmate with Lisette.
And Jim.
Do you imagine that there's an alien creature living inside of you, controlling you, making you do everything that you choose to do? Your thoughts are not your own. Your emotions are not your own. Your essence is not your own. For 3.5 billion years on Earth, bacteria have been living here. Can you believe it?
Yes.
And you know where they are today? They are in our stomach. They're in our intestines. They may be controlling everything we do, and they may be using us as a host to survive, to gain food for them, for they can multiply, so they can travel where they need the right temperature to survive, the right food to survive.
Maybe they decide to eat chocolate.
Oh, why? It's not my fault.
It's the bacteria.
It's the bacteria fault. Now I have someone to blame.
There you go.
What we're going to talk about today is shocking behavioral influences. Things that influence our behavior. Bacteria, epigenetics, and our prefrontal cortex. The expression of your genes can be triggered not only by your environment, not only by your family, but how about by your gut bacteria? Can you believe that? The gut bacteria and what they do and the chemistry that they create inside us is so powerful that it can actually make us do things without us even knowing. And what I mean by that is it controls our emotion. Maybe we're not feeling so good today. Maybe we're feeling unhappy, maybe depressed, maybe happy. You know what? Gut bacteria. I'm really hungry today. Gut bacteria.
Yeah.
I've got a headache. I've got a cold.
Low energy.
Low energy. Gut bacteria.
Yeah.
By the way, today's show wasn't going to start off with gut bacteria, but I just had this feeling.
What are you last night?
I had this feeling. I don't know. I had this gut feeling. That's
okay.
To go on this.
I got
you. All right. You got me. So we're going to actually start off with a little bit of information that we took from our show that we did in October. I think it was October. What was it? October 15th of 2023, which was all about the gut. And that was really getting into how it's made, the different organs and different stuff. And we're going to put that aside because that's not as important as the bacteria itself. Yeah. So let's get started on this, our tour. Bacteria, the first life on Earth, 3.5 billion years of evolution. Colonies of bacterial cells form biofilms and other ordered and complex superstructures. They adopt different survival strategies to make their life comfortable. Bacteria communicate with each other, and my argument that humans are simply a protective shroud to aid in the survival of bacteria. So the human body has 10 to the 14th microbes. That's individual bacteria. 10 to the 14th means one and then 14 zeros after it. There are 10 times more bacteria within our body than there are human cells. They are the important components of the microbiota ecosystem in the human gut. And there are over 1,000 species of bacteria in our body shortly after birth. Most of them, the majority of them, are unknown species. Did you know that?
No, I believe that somebody know about everybody.
No, it's like, hey, who are you? I don't know. Where did you come from? I don't know. I came across the border. Oh.
Oh, illegal. You know? Illegal bacteria.
No, undocumented bacteria.
Okay.
Okay. Within a short time of birth, we are whittling down those 1,000 species to about 500, and they become our pattern, our personal pattern. This intestinal microbiota stabilizes to a more adult-like profile around 1 year of age. The ones that are most suited for our environment are the ones that survive. Composition of the gut bacteria community in the stomach and colon is distinctive for every human being. It basically becomes a personal fingerprint and a secret to personality, emotions, and how we see the world. Those are my expressions, by the way. I believe that the bacteria that we have in our gut, when you start to understand what it does, and we're going to get into the chemistry of gut bacteria in a little bit, but it does change our personality. It does influence our emotions. And because of those two things, it influences how we see the world. Mm-hmm. It influences our behavior. So we were talking about the gut bacteria being whittled down to these like 500 species after about a year. They are the most likely ones to survive. And it's like kind of symbiotic in a way, right? Because you're eating things that they like, you're living in an environment they like. Mm-hmm. But now think about family stress.
Yeah.
The stress in your family, the interactions, the other chemicals that you get released into your body because of your environment influences the chemistry of your gut and therefore influences the survival of certain bacteria.
It's a cycle.
So it is. It can be a cycle that goes up, building strength, or it can tear you down. It's just like if you're eating really bad stuff and it's killing off good stuff in your stomach, it can be a downward cycle. Just like we're talking about it being an up. What it does? It produces serotonin in the digestive tract. So 90% of the body's serotonin comes from the digestive tract. The gut alters the availability of tryptophan, impacting serotonin synthesis in the brain, and that impacts our mood and behavior. It also produces short-chain fatty acids, which promote the growth and function of the cells, which are rich sources of serotonin in the gut. Increased serotonin availability in the neonatal gut can improve the immune tolerance of the child. So these things are all positive things, but if you take it the other way, if you do it the opposite, it becomes negative.
If you create so much, you can have low... defense.
Immune system.
Immune system.
And in fact, I want to go back to that, is the gut itself is the first protection to an invasion of viruses and other bacteria. Imbalances in gut microbiota can disrupt communication between the brain and the gut. By the way, the gut produces a lot of the chemicals the brain uses. It can lead to mental health disorders like anxiety, depression, and neurodevelopmental conditions. Insufficient serotonin levels in the gut can also cause physical symptoms like diarrhea, constipation, bloating, and cramping. How do you think you're going to get along on a day when you're bloating, cramping, and have diarrhea?
So I remember one part of my life when I have a lot of stress, I have gastritis. You know, and this is the bit, and I went to many doctors, take a lot of medicine, and I discovered it for myself, they need to sleep more because I sleep almost 4 hours per day.
Oh, that much?
That much.
Wow.
Because I was a strong lady, and then I figured out sleeping 8 or 10 hours, I start to feel better.
And then you get back to 6 or 7 or 8 later on.
But that's the gap. Told you.
Says, hey, your gut tells you you got to settle down and take care of it.
Yeah.
The survival of the gut, right? It makes you sick when you're not taking care of it. And that's actually true. If you're not taking care of your gut, it can't take care of you.
Yeah.
I think we're going to put that as a slogan, and I'm going to get t-shirts. Okay. Don't take care of your gut. It won't take care of you. Something like that. So what else does the gut do? Synthesizes vitamin K. It aids in the digestion of cellulose. Basically, a good gut is responsible for breaking down the food we eat into the chemicals we need for further processing. It rejects what is not needed, and it protects us from disease. And again, some of this we did go over back in October. But we added some interesting new information to that. Let's see what else we have here. So the gut also does new blood vessel formation in this process called angiogenesis. It helps with the enteric nerve function. It is the effector systems of the digestive tract, the musculature, secretory glands. I can't even speak today. Maybe my gut is telling me something.
You are hungry.
I'm hungry. And blood vessels. Array of varied neurons interconnected by chemical synapses. It helps us transmit information through our body. Chemical transmission of information between neurons. Oh, I was just saying that, and there it is. So it is very important, the what's going on in that gut.
Mm-hmm.
Let's continue on with this. It supplies essential nutrients. It is involved in the production and bioavailability of compounds that protect against cardiovascular disease, lipid and lipoprotein imbalance, helps protect against breast, colon, and prostate cancer, helps protect, when it's in the right balance, osteoporosis, and helps us with menopausal syndrome. Some of us.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
So it's very important. And here are other things that can impact your gut, which is impacting the microbiota, mm-hmm. right? The bacteria in your gut can be impacted by antibiotics, illness, stress, aging, dietary habits, and lifestyle. So drug use, alcohol, smoking, not sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
Not going out in the sunlight, not exercising, all these things can impact our gut in a bad way. So here's some other harmful dietary factors. Sometimes a diet which is mostly from red meat and fortified cereals can have a lot of iron. That iron availability may increase the growth of bad gut bacteria. In fact, iron exposure can contribute to the colonization of certain bacterial pathogens, including salmonella. It may also be a risk for colorectal cancer. Yes, for colon cancer. Why did I just say that? Colon cancer.
That's easy.
Colorectal cancer. Why do they make these like long five-syllable words in science?
Because when the people suffer to do that.
Tell the doctor. Here's some of the harmful lifestyle factors. Cigarette smoking, intestinal disorders that can cause Crohn's disease, changes in intestinal irrigation and microbiome, this is what smoking does, it increases in permeability of the mucosa, which is the gut barrier, meaning you will have more permeation of bad stuff through the gut itself. And you can have impaired mucosal immune responses. Again, the good bacteria, the good the disease fighting systems of your body have worse response if you're not taking care of your gut. And other harmful lifestyle factors include alcohol consumption, which can impact the microbiota in the gastrointestinal tract. Changes in the intestinal microbiota and oxidative stress. Imbalance in the intestinal microbiota and inflammation. And finally, hyperpermeability resulting in endotoxemia. Bacteria can enter the bloodstream because that mucous lining of our intestines is weakened. You can get systematic inflammation, tissue damage, organ pathologies, and other alcohol-related diseases. Boy, that sounds pretty bad. So with all that, what we're saying is because the gut can impact our moods, it can impact our health, mm-hmm. it can impact just how we feel chemically-wise, it impacts the ability for us to transmit information through our brain, through our synapses, that can be controlling our behavior. Do you think it can be impacting then how our cells are reacting, our normal DNA reacts?
I guess it's a combination, because not just the chemical part, also the area, the environment, the all external behavior. So it's a lot of components together they create. I see some search about when you call culture, you grew up in India, for example, when the you have a food, they don't have a lot of clean, but you create different bacteria that we have here. Or the people when travel to Mexico, say, oh, I have the problem, or some people eating the same fruit and have a problem. So that is something that you can see how impact also.
So your culture can influence your culture.
Yeah.
That's kind of interesting. Maybe that's why they call it a culture. Mm-hmm. It is the living,
the
microsystem of the macro system.
Yeah.
Or something like that. Yeah. When we come back, we're going to get into more in depth on how a little bit about the gut. But now we're going to move into the second part, which is epigenetic influences in behavior. Mm-hmm. And how we may recognize them, because the whole thing that we try to do, the idea behind what we're talking about right now, is helping us understand what's going on in our lives to help us maybe recognize some things we can change and do better to have more control over our own behavior.
Yep.
So the bacteria doesn't run us, but we run the bacteria.
Boom.
We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to How My Gut Feels with Lizette
and Gut Jim.
You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate, but we are talking about the gut. Now we're talking about epigenetic.
Epigenetic. That is my lovely topic today.
This is what Lizette brought up last night. She's like, what about epigenetic things?
I just put the topic in the
what
table
and
running away.
What do you think about that? Yeah. And so, first of all, let's talk about what epigenetic is. Epigenetics is how nurture shapes nature. Behavioral, especially, we're going to talk about behavioral. Behavioral epigenetics refers to the study of how signals from the environment trigger molecular biological changes that modify what goes on in brain cells. But not only brain cells, it changes what goes on in our DNA.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, epigenetic behavioral influences, which can be the environment and other things, changes the expression of our DNA. And we're going to get it. This was a great subject. Let's continue on with it. Are you ready?
I am ready.
What is, in order to talk about epigenetics, I want to talk about what it's not. When you talk about gene and gene expression and DNA, we're not talking about a gene variant. A gene variant is a permanent change in the DNA sequence that makes up a gene. We're not talking about that. Changes in DNA do not always cause disease, not a mutation. So we're not talking about changes in the DNA. A change in the DNA would be a variant, and we're not talking about that, but we want to explain what variants are. A gene variant is a change in the underlying genetic structure. That means the code has changed, and not just the expression of the genes. Gene variants can be inherited from a parent or occur during a person's lifetime. If it happens during their lifetime, it can be a mutation of a gene. Epigenetics is not about mutating a gene, but it's about the expression of a gene.
Exactly.
It's like you have all these closets in your house, and the epigenetic piece of it is opening the closet and letting something out of the closet that's been in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's available, but it hasn't been expressed yet.
Mm-hmm. That is the concept.
Okay, so that's the concept. Let's continue on with that. Variants, a little bit more on variants. We have stuff that are inherited variants. This is where DNA has been changed by a parent is passing new DNA to a child, and it's present throughout the person's life in virtually every cell in the body. So every cell is made of this new variant. They're also called germline variants because they are present in the parent's egg or sperm cells, which are also called germ cells. When an egg and sperm cell unite, the resulting fertilized egg cell contains DNA from both parents, and any variants that are present in that DNA will be present in the cells of the child that grows from the fertilized egg. So these are variants that are persistent because it's actually a change in the DNA. And then you can have non-inherited variants, which can be occur at some time during a person's life and are present only in certain cells. So they're not inherited. They typically occur in somatic cells, cells other than sperm and egg cells. These variants cannot be passed on to the next generation, and they can be caused by environmental factors such as UV radiation, ultraviolet, from the sun, or can occur if an error is made as DNA copies itself during cell division. So it may not be when the sperm and the egg meet, but in cellular division, there may be an error, and then that error is just repeated and repeated and repeated. And then it becomes a variant that can be potentially passed on after that if it becomes part of the actual DNA. Like, and that could be considered if it's a bad, and this was an interesting thing. There are variants which are just generic variants that don't harm the human being, and they're just called variants. Mm-hmm. But then there are things that do harm and cause disease, which are called mutations. So, well, speaking of that, most of these variants do not lead to development of disease, and those that do are uncommon in the general population. Some variants occur often enough in the population to be considered common variations. Several variants are responsible for differences between people, such as eye color, hair color, and blood type. So these are generic variants that don't affect anything. It affects stuff, but it's not disease. Although many have these common variations in their DNA, there are no negative effects on a person's health. Some may influence the risk of developing certain disorders, however. So variants may not be a disease in itself, but they may increase the risk or decrease, depending what the variant is. We'll continue on. So now let's talk about the epigenetic.
Finally.
But we want to talk about variants because, again, this is not the DNA changing. This is something happening with the DNA where there's an expression. So there's studies that have been done with twin studies where they look at personality, behavior, appearance, and health. This is how they express themselves, that you can have twins and they grow up in the same household, but something happens and their personalities are distinctly different. Why?
Yeah.
Right? So the expression of their genetic code is different. What else do we have here? Behavior is different. So personality and behavior, that's very closely linked. Appearance.
Sometimes.
You know,
sometimes
I remember.
So similar, sometimes so different too.
It was funny. Well, not funny, but I remember a set of twins I grew up with, and one had a little bit more round face. The other one had a little bit narrow face. And once I was able to figure that out for the rest of their lives, I now can tell them
who
apart.
Is who. Yeah.
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 The other is health. Health can be affected. So they looked at two people that have the same genes, but they have different outcomes in health. And you were talking about cancer.
Yeah, so it's a study about two woman twins. So one developing mammary cancer, and then start to study both, and then say why the other don't have these, and found exactly what cell, whatever is the number 13 or 14, and then this is the way that you can figure out how open expression and exposure for the environment and may you have the disease. You know what I mean? So
okay.
it's no mutation, like that you say, it's no change, it's just the
it's the tendency there to have, it's like the higher likelihood. You have a mm-hmm. higher likelihood, but you need these conditions to happen
exactly.
in order for the door to be open to that expression. To
the, yes, and then right? the good part is they try to study looking for how you prevent that
right.
this door is not open versus the attack the cancer with killing, because killing other cells. So now I guess this is an interesting moment that the chemotherapy chain now and they become like the prevent and protection this open door.
So try to prevent it. So if somebody has potentially in their family mm-hmm. a genetic, I'll call it variant,
mm-hmm.
which is open for cancer, if they can keep that door shut.
Exactly.
Rather than treat the cancer once it happens, let's try to, ahead of time, mm-hmm. take care of that.
So that is really good advance. in the science.
Got it. Let's see what else we have here. So epigenetic mechanisms, molecular events that govern the way the environment regulates the genomes of organisms or the genomes of organisms. Epigenetic processes lead to individual differences in appearance, physiology, cognition, and behavior. Again, this doesn't mean that twins will be different because of, like you're going to have one that has blonde hair and one that has brown hair, or one has blue eyes and one has, these are other expressions. But what's interesting is that the code of humans, the DNA of humans, may be very similar between family and family and family and family, or even culture and culture and culture where people have grown up. Mm-hmm. But there are something called persistent mm-hmm. epigenetic changes that can be passed on. So the door can be opened and then it can be there to be, it's there already.
Also, yeah.
Right? So some of these changes that we see in personality that people are born with are coming and being passed down because a door's been opened that is a persistent one. Because these are, we'll talk about transient versus persistent in epigenetic changes.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see what we have here. Groups of traits or observable physical properties of an organism. We'll talk about appearance, development, behavior. These are things that we just call a phenotype. And these are how somebody expresses themselves because of epigenetic changes. How about more influences? Events, environments that shape us. Environment encompasses pretty much everything that happens in every stage of life. So our social experience, our nutrition, our hormones, we talked about bacteria, our gut bacteria, what we eat, who we are with, if we're smoking something, these are all influences in the epigenetic door opening of our DNA. Like our DNA just doesn't sit there and we're then a victim of our DNA. Mm-hmm. We actually instigate a lot of the problems we have by not taking care of our DNA, by not keeping doors shut. Sometimes it's like, I want to see what's behind this door. Sometimes you don't want to see what's behind that door. Here's some other influences. Toxicological exposures, prenatal challenges, postnatal, after. In adulthood, some things can influence behavior and the epigenetic behavioral tendencies. Self-induced versus situational versus environmental. Why did I put that there? Mm-hmm. Is that some of these things are just because the environment is what it is, and we are, if you want to call an observer in that environment, you can say we are a participant in that environment. If you want to say you're a victim in that environment, you can say all that, right? Because you may not have a choice. However, a lot of these epigenetic behavioral influences are self-induced. They're also situational, where we've put ourselves in the situation, or they are a situation around us that we could maybe extract ourselves from, and they can be environmental. And mm-hmm. environmental, again, it could be we're in an environment and a situation happens, and you know what? We participated in it.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's all these things happen, and then we're triggered. And once you're triggered, you basically open the door, and that door can be a transient door that we may be able to shut again, or a persistent door, which is really difficult. You're trying to shut it, and there's the monster on the other side getting out, mm-hmm. and now the monster's out, and you've triggered a persistent thing that for the rest of your life, you'll have that challenge. And that does happen with children, even children before they're born. The first trimester of development can be a huge influence on the behavior of that child after they're born, depending on what was going on in the mother's environment. Genes undergo active demethylization. Actually, it's demethylation and remethylation. Methylation is a chemical reaction in the body in which a small molecule called a methyl group, which is a carbon and three hydrogen, gets added to DNA, proteins, or other molecules. And this can be the hand on the door opening and expressing that part of the gene or genetic code. They help us make neurotransmitters such as, this is what methylation does, such as serotonin, dopamine, adrenaline, norepinephrine, and this is the one that you and I just talked about, norepinephrine, because I always mess up that word with that other one, and melatonin. That these things sound very similar in a way to what's going on in the gut, too. There's a lot of overlap between what the gut bacteria are doing.
Yeah, serotonin, yeah. Dopamine.
So let's continue on with that. So here is what methylation is. Methylation is a critical biochemical process. It helps in detoxification. It helps in DNA expression, good or bad. It helps in neurotransmitter production, in hormone regulation, and it entails the transfer of four atoms, which is one carbon and three hydrogen, which are attached to each other. And it's type of biological switch that turns off and on, or on and off, to help keep our health in check, and sometimes not. So there's the good and the bad. So what we did is we looked at some of the literature on it, and this is an example of what it looks like when you have DNA and there's these methyl attachments, the CH3 attachments to DNA at certain locations. They can trigger the gene expression of something that, and good expression and bad expression. So it may help with your health, may help with memory. Did you know that it can help with memory as well as learning?
Okay.
As well as it, if it's done the wrong way, it can hurt. So this process, and it happens, I believe, millions, if not billions of times a day, that this is constantly going on with all the DNA in your body. It's very important for our lives and our
health.
Sanity. Well, actually, we will talk about sanity. So methylation does this in a number of ways. It converts tryptophan, which you probably heard about when you eat turkey, to the precursor for serotonin. It helps transport dopamine, norepinephrine, and adrenaline. It converts norepinephrine to adrenaline, which is important for focus and attention. And lastly, it converts serotonin to melatonin to help us sleep. It's the neurohormone for sleep. So there's a lot of stuff that these methylation does, right?
Yeah.
In the body, a lot of chemical things. Serotonin itself carries messages between nerve cells in the brain and throughout the body. It's central, actually it helps the communication between the central and peripheral nervous system. These chemical messages tell the body how to work. You can see how this is important. Learning, memory, happiness, as well as it regulates body temperature, sleep, sexual behavior, and hunger. Interesting. Lack of proper amounts of serotonin play a role in depression, anxiety, mania, and other health conditions. So I'm seeing this real tight connection between gut bacteria and methylation, right? Methylation and gut bacteria, there's a serotonin connection. There's something going on where the one makes use of it and the other supplies it. And if you have a good balance of the two, maybe that's good for health. And I believe it is. What else do we have here? This is what it is. 90% of serotonin is found in the cells lining your gastrointestinal tract.
Wow.
90%. It's released into your blood circulation and absorbed by platelets. Only about 10% is produced in your brain. Serotonin is made from essential amino acid tryptophan. Again, it's in a lot of different foods, turkey being one. This is why we fall asleep at the Thanksgiving dinner, because we eat all the turkey. It's an essential amino acid, which means it can't be made in your body, so it's you have to eat it. You have to get it some way. Some people eat, some people take supplements. And what else do we have on that? We have what it does. What does serotonin do in the body? It regulates your mood. It's the natural feel-good chemical. Helps you feel focused, emotionally stable, happier, and calmer. Who doesn't want to feel emotionally stable?
It's a lot of responsibility. Uh-huh.
Low levels of serotonin are associated with depression. Again, gut bacteria and methylation. And how methylation can trigger or open doors to gene expression, potentially bad ones. So emotionally, if you're not doing so well, and you're imbalanced in serotonin, and methylation isn't working properly, and you're triggered by some outside situation or environment or person, work-related, relationship-related, it's like the perfect storm.
Yeah.
So what we're trying to do is calm as much of the storm as we can, right?
And try to balance your brain also.
Balance your brain by taking care of your gut.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Happy gut, happy brain. It's another t-shirt coming out soon. What else does serotonin do? It helps in digestion. Serotonin is in your GI tract. It helps control bowel function. Not vowel, but bowel, and plays a role in protecting the gut. As we talked about, it helps that protect from foreign microbes trying to cross the line and get into your blood. Serotonin also plays a part in reducing your appetite. It can also trigger nausea when too much is released too fast in the gut. That you release too much, it can't be digested. The chemical message is received by your brain, which you perceive as nausea. So, you know, nausea comes from the same stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, how we feel is coming from this serotonin stuff.
Yeah, this unbalanced body.
Unbalanced. What else does it do? Sleep. Oh, this is important. Serotonin together with dopamine play a role in the quality of your sleep. How well and how long you sleep, like we were talking about before.
Mm-hmm.
Your brain also needs serotonin to make melatonin, a hormone that regulates your sleep-wake cycle. Wound healing, can you believe it? We didn't even talk about this, but when you have a wound, serotonin is released by platelets in your blood to help heal wounds. It causes the tiniest blood vessels, arterioles, to narrow. They narrow, and this causes a slowing of the blood flow and helps clots to form. So how the serotonin helps your gut, so you don't have like micro tears in your gut.
Mm-hmm.
It's helping you if you get a cut on your skin, it's released from your platelets to help you
to
clot.
Yeah.
It's very important. So I wonder if you feel good, do you heal faster? If you feel good, you heal faster.
Yeah.
This is all so tied together. This is a great, I love our research today. This was so interesting.
Me too.
What else does serotonin help in? Bone health. Serotonin levels may play a role in the density of your bones. High levels of serotonin in your gut may play a role in making bones weak. So you got to have it balanced, which can lead to bone breaks and osteoporosis. Now remember, heavy weightlifting and when you're stressing, your bones can help build them up.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be that if you're not doing exercise, which is very important for balance, and you're producing a lot of serotonin, maybe that's not good for you. So sexual health, serotonin also plays a role together with neurotransmitter dopamine in your desire for sex. Again, a healthy gut helps your desire. Happy heart. But would that be that the bacteria feels good and wants you to repopulate so it can grow more bacteria? Again, it's the bacteria. Honey, it's not me. But let's go out for a really romantic date tonight because my bacteria is feeling,
the alien guy.
The alien, the little microbes are feeling that way. So what else do we have? This is the big section, by the way. We're going to have a small section at the end, but here we go. Problems associated with low serotonin levels, lots of problems. Depression, other mood problems, anxiety, sleep problems, digestive problems, suicidal behavior, obsessive compulsive disorder, post-traumatic stress disorder, panic disorders, schizophrenia, and phobias.
Wow.
Now, if I'm scared of having low serotonin, I have a phobia of low serotonin.
Serotoniphobia.
Serotonin phobia, that's what it could be. You are right. Causes of low serotonin levels could be your body isn't producing enough, you aren't efficiently or effectively using the serotonin. This can happen to you if you don't have enough serotonin receptors, or if the receptors aren't working as they should. I will also say if you have bad gut bacteria, this could also be a problem. How to build serotonin? Eat more tryptophan-containing foods. Get more sunlight. Vitamin D has an impact on it.
Yeah.
Take certain supplements. Getting more exercise and lowering your stress level also is a benefit.
Mm-hmm.
To your gut health and your health. Here are some foods with high levels of tryptophan, which is the precursor to the chemical, which is the precursor to serotonin. Salmon, eggs, cheese, turkey, we talked about turkey, tofu,
pineapple,
yeah.
I like that, and nuts.
Nuts, yeah. Oats, and seeds all are foods with high levels of tryptophan, which is that amino acid that we do not produce and we have to eat, that is what we make serotonin from. So very interesting here. Sunlight is very important, so get outside. If you don't get enough exposure to sunlight, it can lead to the mood disorder, seasonal affective disorder, SAD, in some people. Try to get 10 to 15 minutes of sunlight each day to boost not only serotonin levels, but vitamin D levels too. Consider using light therapy to get that needed daily sunlight. And then some people take supplements for that as well. Finally, I believe, exercise. Exercise. Regular exercise is known to increase serotonin levels and improve mood disorders. A recommendation that we've read on, 30 minutes of aerobic exercise 5 times a week and 2 strength training sessions per week. Strength training, again, from my standpoint, helping to keep your bones strong, because with a good balanced level of serotonin, you want to also be pushing to keep your bones strong.
Yeah, yeah. And so the oxygen that you create in your blood when you do aerobic exercise improves your process in your brain, your memory, and immune system.
It does. When we come back, we're going to talk about one or two research little things, and then we're going to leave you with some thoughts on the prefrontal cortex and how that can help you get your mood elevated, your gut to where it needs to be, and you feeling good as well as you could. Welcome back to Gut Health with Lizette.
And Jim.
On 90 Day Soulmate. Today we've been talking about a bunch of stuff on how to get a good mood. We talked about epigenetic influences on opening the door to our genetic code and creating problems as well as creating solutions. So right now we're talking about some of the research on mood and on epigenetic behavioral influences. And let's look at that. So you have environmental influences such as a person's diet, and exposure to pollutants can impact the epigenome. Epigenetic modifications can be maintained from cell to cell as cells divide, and in some cases can be inherited through the generations. You can inherit epigenetic. So again, I'm going to pop off here. These are not genetic mutations. They're not genetic variants. They are expressions of genetic code that's there. And once you program the expression of the genetic code, some of it may be passed on to future generations.
Yeah.
So you haven't changed the DNA code. You've just now opened up a door to something that may be expressed.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something called a persistency of that. Some things are transient and some you can close the door back on. But sometimes once a door open, hard to close. Is that true? Yes, it is. A common type of epigenetic modification is called DNA methylation. We talked about that. It can lead to either transient or persistent functional changes in the nervous system. And we talked about that too. Again, persistent is continuous. And transient means it's on and off, on and off as needed, right?
Yeah.
So some of these things in our DNA are things that we need every day. You just turn it on, turn it off, turn it on, turn it off. But mm-hmm. some you open the door and you've let the, as we said, you let the monster out of the closet. This is very important. The environment during the prenatal stage and infancy impacts significantly on neural development with lasting consequences. Their persistency to epigenetic changes that happen prenatal as well as in infancy. Aversive life events or prolonged stress during pregnancy, especially during the first trimester of gestation, results in increased risk of physically aggressive tendencies, delinquency, and conduct disorder, both in early childhood and adolescence. And finally, environmental factors stably affect by producing specific signals to DNA, chromatin, and mRNA that do not modify the nucleotide sequence. Again, do not mutate. It's not a variant, doesn't change the DNA, but it's persistent and can then be passed on, mm-hmm. this epigenetic change, mm-hmm. which is sometimes if we have like behaviors in our family that are passed on, that sometimes you think it's learned because you're in the family, mm-hmm. and many times it can be, but sometimes it's just this little key that's been opened in your DNA that's passed on. And what makes so many people different, even though we share, our DNA is really close to each other, we have these little switches that have been turned on and off, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
Fingerprints. And some of the fingerprints we talked about being our microbe, our microbiota, mm-hmm. our bacteria is also a fingerprint. We're 500 bacteria in different proportions will create different chemistries for each individual person. Because that's like, just think about from a 0 to 100%, whatever the number is, you can create a billions and billions of combinations.
Yeah.
Let's go on to the next thing here, which is finally our prefrontal cortex. And why we wanted to bring this up is that we do not observe what we do not understand. For example, Lizette and I were talking about a car problem. If you don't know anything about car engines, and let's just go, let's pretend we don't know anything, and you have a problem with your car, you open the hood and you look in the hood and you just see a mess of wires, metal, belts,
parts.
You don't recognize any of it. Mm-hmm. However, if you recognize that the place you add water for the coolant is low, you could look at that and go, ah, the coolant's low. Maybe that's the problem.
That's right? It. This is the only knowledge that
it's the only knowledge I have. That's the only thing I see. Could be a problem.
That, yeah.
Right? But it may have nothing to do with anything else. So if we know nothing about something, we only recognize what we do know about that something.
Mm-hmm.
And if we knew everything about the engine, we could start addressing it. Do I have the right amount of oil in? Can I check the filter?
How is the battery? Electrical issues.
Are my belts frayed?
Yeah.
Right? Is the battery itself corroded at where the cable connects? And the more you start to know, the more you see, the more you can analyze. Today, what we're trying to do is open our eyes to what's inside us, the engine in us, the loads of bacteria, the serotonin, the epigenetic things that can happen to us.
Mm-hmm.
Think about the transient nature of some of these behavioral things. Maybe these aren't doors that have been opened up that can't be closed again. Maybe we can learn to close those doors.
Yeah.
Right? So that's one of the things. We filter what we see by our beliefs and emotions and by our daily conscious thoughts. So going back to prefrontal cortex, if you are thinking positively, you're going to see more positive things in front of you. You're going to react with people positively. You're going to have positive emotions. And remember this, our internal 3.5 billion year old biome, meaning the bacteria, I don't think it's the same bacteria that was around 3.5 billion years ago, but who knows? It may control more than we realize. In fact, our whole show could be brought to you by our biome.
Bacteria.
So what we suggest is feed the beneficial bacteria and help your learning and memory. So there is positive responses. It's been shown that by research that by having a good biome, by having good sleep, good food, by taking care of yourself, you can help your learning and memory, which then helps you understand more, which helps you recognize more, which gives us that big circle of life.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And finally, remember there's persistent and transient epigenetic behavioral influences. And although we may not be able to change a persistent influence, we may be able to open up other doors that give us other ways of behaving. And this comes to emotional, what is that called? Emotional intelligence.
Yeah, you go.
With emotional intelligence, you may still have an emotion, but you may start to recognize that you have that emotion, and you may also start to recognize that there are different options in how you behave to that emotion. Let your brain be a guide by understanding more to your body, to your soul, to your actions. Thank you.
You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.